You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Trying to set me up.
Morning, 67 degrees. Today is Wednesday, August the 23rd. I'm Lee Harris.
Morning.
Hey, kiddo.
I love you.
It's my first time on a commuter train. What about you?
Every day, last 10 years.
10 years? You must know everyone on this train.
I'm sorry, have we met?
No, I'm Joanna.
Michael.
I study human behavior. My job is to answer one basic question.
What's that?
What kind of person are you?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today in our new host, guest host for the Youth Critic Podcast is Dan Daugherty.
Hey, everyone.
Did I say that right?
Dan Daugherty. It's a little bit more succinct than you said it. It doesn't break up so much on the last name.
Okay, my apologies.
No, don't worry about it. You're fine. Everyone mispronounces it the first time they say it.
Okay, cool. All right, and today we are going to be talking about the commuter. So for this episode and a couple episodes within the next week on the Youth Critic Show, I and another guest will be talking about movies that come out in January, and then we might transition into February with Winchester and maybe the new Clint Eastwood movie for 1517 to Paris. We will definitely not be talking about 50 Shades Freed.
Sad.
Definitely not. It's terrible. We can't review it, but it's my choice. And actually, it's not really that terrible in my perspective. But but yeah, it's just no. Anyway, so Dan, starting with you, what did you think of The Commuter?
I thought it was entertaining watch, nothing too incredible or memorable. I really like Wame Kole Sara. Is that how you say the director's name?
I've been mispronouncing it too. I thought the J was present. I thought it was Jermaine.
Maybe it is, Jermaine. Maybe it isn't, but I've liked what I've seen from him so far. I've only seen The Commuter, Unknown in the Shallows, but I really like The Shallows. And I thought The Commuter was enjoyable. Nothing that stood out too much in it, but it was leagues above most January movies that you could go see.
Yeah, and to be fair to the January movies that have come out, this was actually supposed to come out in October, but they pushed it because they thought it was going to get crushed by The Snowman, or also known on film Twitter as Mr. Police.
You could have saved her.
You could have saved her. I gave you all the clues.
Oh god, that would be
that will be remembered forever. Yeah. But yeah, it was supposed to come out in October. They pushed it in January, like early last summer. And now we're getting in January, and yeah, it's a really good January release. And I've seen out of January so far, Paddington 2, which is actually pretty good. That shouldn't be shamed at all.
I'm going to see that on Friday. Actually, I'm very excited.
Nice. And I've seen Proud Mary, which is odd, which actually probably deserved to not be widely distributed because it's not really a movie. It's like a demo reel of a movie. It's like a horror, like where you just feel terrible and then feel terrible for Taraji P. Henson because that's what it is. It's just a demo reel of a movie. And Insidious 4, which was actually good. It's actually surprisingly decent. Yeah, surprisingly well done. So out of this was actually pretty good for action tier stuff, especially since we need something to hold us till the big action spectacle in Black Panther and Annihilation, and then as we get to the crowded March. It's a good film, and actually you kind of described how I feel about all of Jemma Collette Sierra's movies, is that they're good, they're nothing special, they're just fun, entertaining films.
Yeah, he's like a, I don't want to say dollar store because that sounds bad, but he's like a great value version of Tony Scott. They have a lot of similarities in the way they made their action movies.
Yeah, I would say discount Tony Scott, but even that sounds a little too harsh, because I've used that a few times on even harder actresses and directors. So, let's just say 50% off Tony Scott.
Yeah. All right. We'll go with that.
Okay. Yeah. It's, really well staged action. You understand the geography of where everything's going, and there's always a twist, but it's always staying in the broad populist entertainment style.
Yeah.
And that's really all of Jemma Collette Sierra's movies. They're always just on the edge of being like, oh my gosh, this could be great. I think Run All Night's probably still the best of his movies.
I still need to see that. I actually have been really interested in that movie, but I never ended up watching it.
It's really good. It's really good. I mean, there's still like some things that, like, I always think Liam Neeson in these action movies sometimes, for the exception of a couple, is kind of just giving a two-dimensional performance.
Like, yeah, just I would agree.
Below. And he's given two-dimensional characters, so it kind of, Run All Night has that issue too, where it's just like, it's just the edge above compelling.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I feel about these movies, and Commuter is just kind of like that. It's just a much more B picture than, I think I expected.
And that's I think I could agree with that.
So Dan, I'm gonna let you take this. What is the plot of The Commuter?
The Commuter follows a retired police officer turned what was he, like a banker or something?
Insurance salesman?
Like that. That's what it was, yes. And after he gets fired, he's taking the train home, and a mysterious woman, played by Vera Farmiga, comes up to him and poses a moral question to him about if you knew something that you did was going to affect a random stranger, but you were given, I think, what was the amount of money that she gave him?
She started out with 25 grand, and then I think in the end it would be like 100 grand.
Uh-huh. And she poses that moral question to him, and she says it's just a hypothetical, but then he discovers that the money is on the train. He has to find out who the person is that they're after, or what is it, another person will die, anyone close to him. They say they're going after his family, his coworkers. So it starts this web of intrigue with him going up and down the train cars trying to figure out who this mysterious person they're going after is.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the film also like implies too that this person also got him fired after his fired at his insurance salesman job, and in order to push him even further to make the decision to take the money and accept the offer and carry out the plan. Now in the film, like when it starts out, it's not necessarily he has to take someone out, he has to find this person and give him and let the and then somehow like
signal he places a tracker he places a tracker yeah. on the person's bag or something.
Mm-hmm. And the but however after he gets caught by the person who was supposed to kill the character Vern, I think, or hold on, I have the I think I have it on here, hang on, where did I put it? Pune. P- Prin. After he finds the person that was supposed to kill Prin, it becomes this, you know, he accidentally, or in self-defense, kills this person, and now he has to find it and find this person and kill Prin. And that's what kicks off the second half of the movie, where he's now desperate because he's got like less time to find it before everyone leaves the train.
Yeah. There was like 7 stops, I think, before the person they were going after got off.
Right.
So he was under the gun.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and he has like less than approximately 2 hours to do this, because that's how long it takes to get to the end of the stops where this person's going to go off. So yeah, it's an interesting Hitchcockian, almost starts out like a little Strangers on a Train kind of thing.
A little bit, yeah.
The two characters talking and kind of proposing ideas, proposing kind of criminalizing ideas to each other, and then it just goes to like, gotta find this person and take them out. And that's the kind of intriguing thing of the movie, is like, what do you do in this situation? And then the screenplay just goes to work and finds different ways to track down this person that I would never have thought of.
Yeah. Forget what I called it a morality play posturing as a pulpy thriller novel put on screen, which I think is probably like, this is like, if this was a book, this is like one of those books that you see someone reading on a plane and then it's just a page turner. It doesn't stick with you too much, but you're enjoying it while you're on the ride.
Absolutely. So getting into spoilers, and we haven't really done much spoilers, but getting into spoilers, I want to talk about the third act, because it's kind of where the film, you can either go with it or you can just like walk out because it's so absurd.
Because
in the third act of this movie, they basically derail the train, this, you know, mysterious shadowy corporation, which we never see in the entire film. They derail the train to try to kill this one person, and everyone miraculously survives.
There's a really, really goofy shot of Liam Neeson jumping from one train car to the other, and he like slides under it and almost gets crushed by the falling train, and he comes out of that almost entirely unscathed. He's just sweating a lot. He's not scratched up. He's not bleeding. It's really, really ridiculous, but...
Oh, yeah. It is beyond ridiculous.
Although, let's not skip over maybe the best scene in the movie, which is the train car fight with the left-handed electric guitar.
Yes, that is... It's a really creative scene, because, I mean, this person, like, because this person was carrying, you know, a guitar, and, of course, he's... right-handed as Neeson and seen. So it's just interesting how that was unveiled, and then of course, you know, we have to use a electric guitar prop to beat this person to death, and it's just really interesting, really funny, and it's also well choreographed.
Yeah, it's Colette Serra, he really understands spatial relations, I've noticed, with his big action scenes like The Shallows. What's really striking is that about like 40 minutes of it, she's just on that rock playing like a cat and mouse game with the shark. And then I haven't seen Nonstop, but I know it all takes place on an airplane, which is pretty impressive that you can stage an entire movie in one location like that. And then he does that again with this.
And also going to Nonstop for a second, like on that plane, you get those overview shots that are also present in this movie too, of like, where everyone is, where everyone's sitting. So if you're really paying attention, you know where everything is on the train. So it's a really good way, you know, Colette Sierra has already established, has a wide master shot establishing where everyone is, and everyone stays in their seat. So you can tell where Liam Neeson's at in the fight when they are, you know, when they're fighting. So you know, like how much more closer they are to the door. It's not like you're, like, they're next to the door in one stop, and then next, you know, they're, like, right beside the car or something. Right,
yeah.
It's very well done in geography. And, yeah. But going back to the ending, it's so ridiculous. And it's also ridiculous that everyone miraculously survives. And to be fair, like, there was only a few people left in the car.
Yeah.
And they were able to, like, brace each other to survive. It's just still kind of ridiculous how much it is. And then for the, and you would think that is the climax of the movie, the train being derailed, but no, there's, you know, 10 more minutes where we got to fight with Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen.
Patrick Wilson, yeah. Yes, yeah, Night Owl.
That would have been something if Dr. Manhattan was in this movie. And they just have a fight that leads to kind of a predictable twist.
Yeah, can I ask you a question? Did you call almost immediately that it was going to be him taking part in this whole ploy once they introduced him, like the buildup that he and Neeson used to be partners there, hanging out at the bar? Did you call that he would end up being a part of this whole thing as quickly as I did? And I think a lot of people could have.
Normally when I watch these kind of thrillers, I kind of just try and let the film take me on the journey.
Yeah.
But it's so obvious. Like, as soon as he stepped on the train, I pretty much, okay, yeah, it's not Sam Neill, because also it's very important that Sam Neill wasn't really a part of the conversation of him being let go. Like Sam Neill's character, the police chief, just kind of, you know, says hi and then walks away.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and whereas Patrick Wilson is the one that hears, you know, Liam Neeson kind of have a small little, like, heart-to-heart moment about him losing his job and not being able to tell his wife about it, and even though it was really just a couple hours after he lost it, so. But anyway, it's just an interesting, that's why I say it's a predictable twist, because you can see it coming if you're paying attention.
Yeah.
But in these movies, I try to just let the movie take me on the ride rather than try and figure it out. When I first see these movies, I like to just see the machinations at work and see if it's keeping me interested on that level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because then on my second and third viewing, I can assess, you know, okay, well, like on, I can kind of review the machinations going forward at, now that I've seen it and I now know where everything's going to lead to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I do with these movies, is I try to like let the film do its job, and then later on I'll like go back and rewatch.
Yeah, I never want to, I don't want to say that I predicted the twist and like act like I'm smarter than the movie, because I never want to do that with movies, especially when they hinge on a twist like that, but it was a little spelled out in the open.
Yeah, that's just the one thing I can see people like, that's the one reason why I say you're either, after this third act, after the derailment, you're either with the movie or you're not, because that's when the whole film kind of just goes all, it just, you know, it just goes into obscurity a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I kind of still like this movie.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
So, but let me ask this. Do you think it was just a little too, like, on, too obvious that, actually, never mind. I was going to ask about Sam Neill offering a job, but as like, do you think it was just too cookie cutter, or do you think it was just too cookie cutter of an ending?
You know what? I don't mind it every once in a while when a movie is cookie cutter, because not every movie has to reinvent the wheel. And when it's a movie like this, especially, I can just kind of roll with whatever it gives me. And even if it's cliche, just enjoy it because of the craftsmanship. Like, this is a very well put together movie, which kind of lets me forgive how kind of, like you said, cookie cutter it is.
Right. And leading up to the very last scene of the movie, they do find the commuter and Joanna, and it's really just interesting how it all it's really interesting how they found her and how the character has grown in, as an arc.
Yeah.
Because you... and he has now become the person that's going to challenge Joanna, or that's going to face the challenge, give Joanna, you know, a challenge, and that now she has to, you know, plead guilty or not plead guilty.
Yeah.
It's just it's a very well-made movie. It's just like all of Jamaica Letzera films that I've seen, and I've only seen, Unknown. I've seen all the Liam Neesons, and then The Shallows in this.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen parts of House of Wax, and I've not seen Orphan. So
I've heard Orphan's pretty cool. I've heard that's a really good movie.
Someone already spoiled the twist of that movie for me, and
yeah, I got it spoiled for me too.
And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. But yeah, moving on. Why do you think Liam Neeson continues making action movies? Because I think he said like two or three times now that he was retiring from action films.
No, part of it might just be the good paycheck. Maybe he also just likes working with Cole Sierra, because this is like their fourth movie together, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe that's what's drawn him back. Maybe he just respects a good workman. You can tell that he's getting way too old to do these movies now, and he was like pushing it when the first Taken came out, and that was a decade ago. So I think this is a good swan song for him to go out on, because you can tell in some of the scenes that he's just not up to the physical task of these movies anymore.
Well, I mean, it's just, and I think it was good that they kept everything, like most of the action with just like fist fights.
Yeah.
Instead of like him constantly like jumping from train to train and then like jumping off a train to land on a car or something elaborate as that. Like,
yeah, they don't do what the Taken sequels did, where they turn him into a superhero, even though he's clearly just an old guy.
Yeah, he's clearly just an old guy that wants to save his family.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just interesting, because I thought when we got to Run All Night, I thought they were going to do, if Jamaica Letzera and Liam Neeson, because clearly they do, like, why would you work with someone four times if you didn't like this person? But with Jamaica, I thought with Run All Night, they were going to do more films like this, and Jamaica Letzera was just going to mature as a filmmaker with these kind of movies. Because even Run All Night, it's not like a straight action movie. It's more of a... It really is like it's a running away picture, like just running away from, you know, Common or another like mob and mob enforcer. It's like they're running from Ed Harris's, you know, gang.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's really just a movie more about running and more about the characters, the two characters, Joel Kinnaman and Liam Neeson, you know, in their development. So that's what that movie's more about than just, you know, action or B movie plots. And of course, Jamaica Letzera's next movie is with The Rock.
Is it really? I didn't know he already had another movie lined up.
He is currently on tap to do Jungle Cruise.
Oh, okay. I just heard Emily Blunt got added to that movie's cast.
Yep, and I think production's scheduled to start filming later this year. On Wikipedia, it says spring of 2018, but that was, let me see when, but that was almost a year ago when they said they were going to start filming in spring 2018. So we'll see. So Dan, what other thoughts do you have on The Commuter?
It's going to be a cable classic in about 5 years' time. You know, when you just flipping through the channels and you find like on FX or TNT, there's just that movie that's on all the time on like a rainy Saturday afternoon. that's exactly the space this movie's going to live in. And it's pretty fun at that.
Yep, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see this by the end of the year on Netflix or HBO Go.
Yeah, and I think so.
And you just want to watch this on a normal, and yeah, you just want to watch this on a sunny afternoon. So yeah, and The Commuter, it's a well adequate blockbuster. It'll just hold you until the next one, which currently the new blockbuster out right now is the new Maze Runner, but that one's kind of coming and going, unfortunately, because it's actually kind of not that bad. It's not really that bad.
I've never seen any of those movies, so I didn't even realize it came out this weekend.
Yeah, it's. I'll say this about the Maze Runner franchise is that they're not at. They don't get as horribly ridiculous as the Divergent series,
mm-hmm.
but it's nowhere near as interesting as the Hunger Games.
Okay,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there.
It's like a good middle. It's like it's not bad, but not good. Even though I actually kind of like the third one more than the other two. So, but anyway. I kind of agree with Dan. It's perfectly adequate for cable TV and it'll be nice. It'll be interesting to watch on TNT when it's, you know, all of, you know, what, 2.5 hours with commercials.
Yeah.
All right. And with that, I think we can wrap this part up.
Okay.
Dan, where can the good people find you?
My Twitter handle is CashewJULCE. It looks like cashew juice, but the I is a lowercase L because the other username was taken. But yeah, you can find me there.
All right, cool. And you can find me at Movie Kale, and you can also follow me at The Youth Critic. Where I post information on this podcast. You can also check out the channel that distributes this podcast at KHD Network. That's it for a few days until we can get some more January reviews in. Dan, thank you so much for coming in and doing the show.
Happy to be on.
And we'll be back with you soon.
All right.
Let's do an experiment.
What if I asked you to do something that could profoundly affect an individual on this train?
I don't understand.
Someone on this train does not belong. All you have to do is find them. In the bathroom, there is $75,000. That money is yours if you do this one little thing.
I thought this was hypothetical.
You have until next stop to decide. What kind of person are you?
Set me up. No one forced you to take that money.
What do you want from me?
It's just one little thing.